Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 58, and this week's guest is Nick Dvoracek. Nick comes to talk to us about the Worldwide Pinhole Photography Day and his homemade cameras. And Andrew's back. Hello everyone, welcome back to the podcast. This is show 58. Nick, how are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine.
We don't have Andrew yet, so he might not have got the link, so we might have to... Oh, there he is. Hey, Andrew.
Yeah. Did you start without me?
I was talking to our guest, Nick, yeah.
So, oh, well, there we go.
If you can tell by the smell of salt, Andrew's returned.
I have. Have you missed? Did you miss me?
We did. Well, a little bit, but not too much. How was your vacation?
We had 4 days in Sherwood Forest, where Robin Hood used to live.
Yep.
We saw Little John. No, I didn't see Little John. It's a massive sort of tourist attraction, you know. There's not much of Sherwood Forest. It's quite small, really. There's a big oak tree there, which Robin Hood's supposed to have hidden in.
Oh wow!
Yeah, but you know, yeah, we had a lovely time.
Cool.
Consumed a fair bit of red wine and a fair bit of gin.
Nice.
Did I take it? Oh, I took some pinhole pictures. Yeah.
Yep. What did you take pinhole pictures of?
The big oak tree.
That Robin Hood hid in?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yep. Awesome.
Yep. Cool. And I've been, and I've got a couple of rolls developed. Not that one, actually. One roll of pinhole from FP4 and another one of T-Max 400. And I've never used T-Max 400 until... just recently, and I developed it in PMK Pyro, which I've had kicking around the darkroom for a long time, and the negs look sweet, nice yellow stain on them. So we'll see.
I haven't used T-Max 400 for pinhole before.
Hmm. Well, I shoot it in my
hole gun in the LCA 120 I have.
Yeah. I haven't used it in the pinhole yet. These were just shots in a lens camera in a Rolleiflex.
Oh, I got you.
But I've been following a few people on the Lensless Podcast Facebook group who use T-Max 400. Yeah. I haven't really got into it for pinhole work at the moment, but I think I might do if I'm liking what I'm seeing so far.
There's so many options. Everything seems to work, you know.
Anyway, I'm ignoring Nick. Hello, Nick.
Hello.
How are you?
Nice, bright, sunny day in Wisconsin.
Nice.
In addition to our excitement and learning about the anchor a few minutes ago, we had a power outage.
Oh no!
For about an hour and a half until 9:30, so that was exciting. But
yikes!
I always love you, American guests, because my American geography is improving no end. So we've. Who did we have on, Corey, who was in this same area, who photographed around Lake Superior?
Oh, you had somebody from Lake Superior. There was a guy from Lake Geneva.
I can't remember who it was.
Thunder Bay and all that sort of area.
Yeah, I'm afraid I don't remember their names, but I've been kind of surprised. There's that woman in England, Wendy Chapman, who says she's from Wisconsin, but she's never specified where that was, so.
We can't get. I met up with Wendy just a few weeks ago.
Somebody mentioned that the pinhole thing guy from Madison, Cameron Gilly, something like that. And there's somebody in Door County, who actually has a pinhole photography store. I've been dying to go.
Really?
And gallery and store up there.
Whereabouts? So whereabouts in Wisconsin is that, then, Nick?
Door County?
Yeah.
It's a peninsula that sticks out from the northwest part of the state. Green Bay is on the left.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Lake Michigan on the right.
Mm-hmm.
Sturgeon Bay is right at the base of it, but there's a... So I've been meaning to go up there and see who this guy is. He actually sells products and things.
I haven't been to Wisconsin before, but I've been to Minnesota.
Well, the upper Midwest is, you know... Unfortunately, they have a better government than we do. But...
Right. So, Nick, Andrew?
Yes, mate.
What did you want to... I don't know where I'm going with this.
Oh, you! I'm away from the show for 1 week, and you fall into disarray.
I did.
So Nick, it's lovely to have you on. For folks listening, if you're not familiar with Nick Dvoracek, is that how we pronounce your name?
That sounds correct.
There you go. I did wonder if it was a silent D, because it could have been Voracek, couldn't it?
I know, it's exactly the same as the composer Anton Dvorak, except. We had a little bit less influence with the king, so we're Dvorak Czech. So
are you from Eastern European heritage once upon a time? Is that what?
Oh, yes. Yes. My father's grandparents came from, were immigrants, and my mother's parents were immigrants.
Cool.
So the United States is full of immigrants.
Yep.
It's the melting pot you always heard of.
Yeah.
It is, and fantastic for it too.
So we have Worldwide Pinhole Photography Day to talk about. And Nick's page. But Nick, if you want to let everybody fill everybody in real quick about how long you've been doing pinhole, or what got you into pinhole and what keeps you into pinhole?
Tell us a little bit about yourself. That's probably where we need to start.
I had a couple episodes of interest in photography as a kid. And after I graduated, I got a job in a library at a university here in Wisconsin, and you got 3 free credits. And I had been living in New York and had a friend who was going to Pratt Institute, who was a photography student at the time. And actually, she's still a professional photographer in New York. Her name is Lauren Paperno. She probably hasn't thought of me for 50 years. but anyway, I took photography course, and one thing led to another, and I eventually got a master's degree there. And I got a job in a small liberal arts college out on the prairie, and they had a one person that taught one basic photography course in their art department. A liberal arts college, and he had some business with his father and had to leave, so they're looking for somebody to teach photography. And I was really into photography. Boy, I was going to be an artist at the time. And they let me teach the thing. Several years later, they always had a student art show, and every they invited a prominent artist. And part of the deal was, not only did they judge the art show, but they made some sort of presentation or had a workshop or a master class or something like that. And to get it down to a long story, that Ruth Thorne Thompson was just making a big name for herself at that time with her expedition series. It's in every museum. If you go to a museum and there's pinhole photography in their collection, it's probably Ruth's expedition series. And so she'd just gotten her MFA. And so she came down and did it. And that was my first experience. And so I started doing it on and off, made an assignment for my advanced students. And then I sold out and went instead of being a photography artist, went into being an AV guy. And worse yet than that, an AV administrator. I was working on a summer program with some people, and they were saying, well, what can you suggest things that would be good for our summer program for gifted kids? I said, well, pinhole photography would be just great. And I had also done a grant program about using it as science that was, a short-lived, again, revival of it. And actually, we'll talk about my son in a minute. But actually, my son did a pinhole photography thing for a science fair, I think, in second grade.
Cool.
So I started teaching this summer course for kids, and that just sort of flipped me on to where it became, again, something that I always did and I've continued to do. So, and that was about the turn of the millennium. But again, this workshop with Ruth Thorne Thompson was in 1983. And the grant project was in 1992.
So. So once again, I'm blown away by being introduced to somebody who I feel I should have been aware of. And I just did a quick search on Ruth Thorne Thompson. And is Ruth still with us, Nick, or is she?
As far as I know, you know, again, you get a link to her gallery, to the gallery who represents her, and that's about it. But, and you know, she's from Door County, so.
Wow.
So another Wisconsin connection.
You familiar with her work, Corey?
I'm not.
You will be after this. Yeah, she's.
I probably have.
Well, again, the thing that the one that's everywhere, and she did another series about the garden, and she's done some large work, and,
Joseph Bellows.
Again, I
gallery.
Look her up every once in a while, but it's been a bit.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Wow. Cool. Okay. So, Nick, your involvement. I suppose you first came to my attention. I don't know, but I've certainly been aware of you on the Facebook group for a while, and I didn't immediately make the connection, the link between you and Worldwide Pinhole Photography Day. I should have done, but I'm such a numpty. So,
well, again, it's not my website. I'm not, you know, it's we're sort of the caretakers of the tradition now.
Sure. Maybe educate me and others, folks listening who are not so familiar with the Worldwide Pinhole Day, Pinhole Photography Day, and how you fit into it, and who else is involved. And
well,
how it's changed over the years, perhaps.
Well, I'm technically the team coordinator, but I've been the support coordinator since 2004, I think. And that means that I answer the emails. I'm the receptionist. The other members of the team are Chuck Flagg, the education coordinator. Lena Kalberg, whom you've had on your show, is a translations coordinator. Justin Cannell is publicity.
And him as well.
Pardon?
We've had him on the show as well.
Yes, and he's been on the show as well. Tom Miller is, and by the way, Lena's in Sweden, Chuck's in Illinois. And Justin is in
Bristol.
Bristol. Tom Miller is the events coordinator, and that leaves me.
Okay.
Here in Wisconsin. Tom's in Minneapolis, and how it's changed. It used to be a really big, fairly, you know, had a lot of people involved. That we had a fairly extensive publicity group, and we had a fairly extensive translations group. Now, remember, this started in 2001.
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
Do you remember trying to use Babelfish in 2001? And, you know, it was more of a joke of how that would translate than actual.
Yeah, I mean, 2001.
So we depended on... on this whole team of translators and also publicity. No Facebook, no Twitter, no, you know. I mean, it was started on an email discussion forum, which, you know, when's the last time you participated in an email discussion forum? very different.
But who?
And we went along that way quite a while. There were, you know, people came and went as coordinators quite a bit. When did I retire? 2014, things changed quite a bit. So Greg Kemp, who I have to, you know, bring up that, again, a lot of people were founders of Pinhole Day and put a lot in, but Greg was the one who wrote the code that made the website, which ties the whole room together. I hope I didn't lose you with the Big Lebowski reference there. And Greg was the webmaster, and you know, he was a painter, he was a photographer, and he was a really talented programmer. We would sort of suggest things. I mean, this thing was famously first suggested by Zernike Au on February 14th on Valentine's Day. Wouldn't it be cool if we could have a day for pinholers?
What year was that, Nick?
Not 2001.
2001,
yeah. Okay.
And on the last Sunday in April, we went live.
Nice.
So from
we didn't
just
go live.
Two
I
weeks.
Wasn't involved. I wasn't involved. I was just, right. Well, no, it was 2 months.
2 months.
Two and a half
oh,
months.
Oh, yes, sorry. Yeah.
But still, Greg wrote the website. I mean, he just wrote it, and he would do that. He'd say, oh, you know, how about if we adjust this? And like 5 minutes later, Greg said, well, how about this? And I thought I could, we could make it do this too. And oh, okay, Greg, fine. That's really cool. And so we went along and really grew until I think 2012 was our peak. And for, I don't know why, but then we've trailed off. We had about 3,500 users in our peak. Or users submissions, and this year we just had a little over 2,000. So anyway, in 2004, Greg was first diagnosed with cancer, and he tried to rid himself of everything he could. He had been running the Pinhole Visions website, which again, that email list is what started Pinhole Photography Day, and tried to get a webmaster for years, and people would volunteer and then they wouldn't log in or wouldn't do anything. And we had a copyright permissions rights argument 1 year, and then and the guy who was going to be a webmaster was off on that. So anyway, Greg just would keep doing it. And in the fall of 2014, the other person I want to point out from the original team is Tom Miller from Minneapolis, mm-hmm. who takes pinhole photographs in large potato chip cans. Huh. I'm not sure if they're ubiquitous in the whole country, but potato chips used to come into these large tins, and Tom collects these things and takes 11 by 14 negatives with him.
Sounds like anyway, another guest.
He was on the founding team, and he's been the leader. He was the coordinator until, again, 2014. He wanted to back off a little bit. And for some reason, Greg got a renewed enthusiasm for it and tried to recruit a new webmaster. So he sent out an email to the and by the way, Tom does all the business, financial parts of it. Again, he's mm-hmm. He's just about any role. Anyway, getting back to Greg says, well, let's try to get a new webmaster, you know, let's see if we can do this again. So he sends it out to the email list of everybody. And a couple days later, I get this email from Greg. Says, Nick, this guy named Andy Hansen Dvoracek volunteered to be the webmaster. Do you know this guy? So without me volunteering at all, my son, who I've again got to be a pinhole photographer when he was, what, 7 years old, volunteered to take it over. Well, as it happened, Greg died.
Oh, man.
And I don't think Andy and he had done much more than exchange passwords. And the site is, I mean, Greg wrote this site, but it was like, you know, you don't even think of it as programming. He would just create and brush things onto this site. So it's a little eccentric and idiosyncratic in its programming. And about that time, the server people upgraded the system software. which broke everything. So Andy climbs in there, and by March, we had it back running, working the way we expected it, way we'd hoped to it. But now it's kind of what we're trying to do is just maintain this thing, because it works. And it's really odd. It all sets on these pre-scripted commands. I get these emails, change in website state, period, such and such. And it's like Greg is talking to me from the grave. And the website just changes automatically. So I guess we've got sort of this superstitious reference for Greg's coding now. And so we get a lot of criticism that...
We lost Nick.
We did lose Nick.
You didn't tell him, did you, that if we lose him, we can follow the link back to him?
Hang on, I'll...
Have you uploaded stuff to the... to the Worldwide Pinhole Day site, Curry?
Do what?
Have you uploaded pictures to their to the site?
I haven't, not yet.
I meant to do it this year, and then I missed the deadline.
I still have to develop some film. Actually, I'm going to. I'm excited because I got some of this RO9, the road and all.
And how far did I get on that rambling thing before we were disconnected?
Not long.
Oh, you! I think you were trying to say that you'd got some criticism, or the website gets some criticism about something, but then we lost it.
Oh, for being old-fashioned and old-fashioned-looking and creaky and a little weird interface. But like I say, we've gotten to the point where we sort of have this reverence for Greg's coding, and we want to keep it, you know, going. And it would just take quite an investment in time and money to rebuild it from scratch.
And you're there to help folks, aren't you, if they're having problems? Because I know that you have to be quite, you have to get the file size right, don't you, of the image.
There's one thing where Greg put in that puts a cookie on them that doesn't let people submit afterwards. That's a pain in the ass. But if they read the screen, they won't do that. And the other thing is there's kind of a limit on the size people.
Yeah.
You know, in 2000, when's the last time we increased the size? Somewhere in 2008, 2009. And since then, people try to submit 7,000 pixel wide images. And they, you know, they kill the thing. So it works pretty well. And we had
parameters.
We had an odd thing this, I don't, Andy never really explained it to me, where the submission form wouldn't work for 3 or 4 hours. And it's gotten to be, you know, like that we really don't depend on translators anymore because Google Translate is so well. We really don't have a publicity team anymore. So it's just gotten to be this creaky old, traditional, strange, odd little weird artifact on the internet, which seems really appropriate for Pinhole.
And of course, the Facebook groups that are around, like ours and two or three others, are becoming quite interactive now. And you know, Worldwide Pinhole Day seems to be getting, I know you said the numbers were down posting to it, but we were trying our best to promote it. And
yeah, neither one of you have submitted a picture, though.
I know. We were just saying about that. I'm so sorry. I meant to do it, and I forgot. And then I realized I was too late.
I'll be more of a nag next year.
you need to. Yeah. But I did take pictures on that day. I just didn't submit.
Well, that's true. A lot of people still celebrate it. It's kind of fun that way.
Yeah. And of course, I went and met up with some folks on the day. And Nick, have you ever met up with those guys who meet up either side of the Atlantic? You know,
No, they were in Boston and we toyed with the idea. But my daughter-in-law had spring break. She's a teacher. And so it was more fun to go out there and have spring break with her than to go out on a weekend. Plus, going to Boston on a weekend is real expensive.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, was it? Well, you should have come to Boston in Lincolnshire. That was.
Yeah. Well,
it might have been cheaper.
again, we haven't written out the future, you know. So.
I met up with Wendy. You mentioned Wendy, and she's lovely. And we had a bit of a chat with her in the in the cafe in the morning as we were having breakfast and recorded her. So she makes an appearance on a few shows back. Mm-hmm. I'd like to get her on properly onto the show, but we'll see if she's she's keen. But she's posting some lovely work with her Holger wide pinhole camera that she took with her to Boston.
Yeah, I guess you guys have a lot of reverence for these cameras.
Andrew does. I sold mine. I was like, this thing sucks.
That probably brings us nicely onto onto the sort of cameras that you use, Nick. And I think if folks, Nick has a fantastic blog, which we'll talk about shortly. But you know, you make pinhole cameras. I've been very impressed at the kind of detail of research and information sharing on your blog about pinhole sizes and the studies that you've done. So, Nick, would you do us a great honor of talking about some of the cameras that you make and maybe passing on a few hints and tips about construction for the do-it-yourself pinholers amongst us?
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, you can do it. It's easy. I'm a graphic artist, so I guess I'm a little handy with an X-Acto knife. The first camera that I made, again, Ruth, when we did that workshop, Ruth sent me a design, and I would kill to have that sheet of paper again. I don't know what happened to it. And I used that camera. It was a 4x5. It was easy to load and reload. And it was made out of taping cardboard together with 3M235. Wonderful, opaque photographic tape. Still available, but very expensive now. There's a bunch of others available, and nothing's quite as good as 3M235. Anyway, in 2005, I helped my dad move to Florida, and there was this guy on F295, Sarge. His real name is Daryl Duckworth, and he also had an account as Daryl Duckworth. But he had these two accounts, and Sarge was like a drill sergeant. It was like, get out there, take some photographs. What are you leakers doing? And he would comment as Sarge. And so I thought, well, wouldn't it be funny that when I go to Florida, I take pinhole photographs and I can, you know, sort of feed Sarge's little fantasy here. And so I, you know, again, what's a camera? It's a box that's got a hole in it, but you know, I don't want to be mucking with my one shot things. I was driving a U-Haul truck to Florida in the summer, and I didn't want to be hassling with a changing bag and all that. So I thought I'll make a film camera. So, you know, what's the difference if a film camera has got a chamber to hold, the supply chamber to hold the take up, space in the middle where the exposure happens, and some way to wind the thing on. So fine. And I looked at the Durcon. It was too flimsy and hard to put together. And I had used a matchbook, but matchbooks are kind of, every time you change film, you've got to tape the damn thing up. And it's prone to light leaks every time you tape it up. So I'm a graphic artist. I worked with a lot of foam core, and so I glued together a box that worked.
Foam core seems a really great material for people to start with.
Well, it's very light. It's easy to glue. It's easy to cut. It's it's opaque.
It gets the job done.
It's opaque. That's a good one. Black foam core is.
Yeah.
And I went there and I took a bunch of photographs. Oh, this is cool. I think these look pretty neat. But there were two that I took in the morning and the evening my dad lived right on the shore of a lake in a rec park there. And I took these two pictures at dawn and dusk. And they were like my favorite photographs that I ever took.
Cool.
Wow, who would have thought color 35 millimeter pinhole? Who the hell does that? And it was just like, oh, wow. So I just really fell in love with them, and then zing, that was it for 10 years. Again, working on these with these pinhole kids, they say, oh, what can I do when I go home? And well, yeah, right, you're gonna have a dark room in your basement, and So I thought, well, I'll make a camera that anybody could put together and use 35 millimeter film and just take it to the Walgreens. And so that's when I did this first Populist, which in retrospect is kind of a weird little design. But it started me, and I started carrying one. And it was little, I put it in my pocket. And so I started carrying one with me all the time, and just taking pictures of whatever I did.
So you've got a link on Pinholica, folks. Yes. Listening, Pinholica.
Yep.
There's plans.
Yeah, that's it. So you've got
Metallica or Alcoholica.
Yeah, Alcoholica, I get. Yeah. Never really got into Metallica. Yeah. So you've got to links to download the templates. So the Populist seems to be, there's a photograph here with about seven or eight. Are these all different versions of basically little 35 millimeter?
The different distance from the pinhole to the paper. Made it.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, again, it's a, well, and there's a 6x9 in there. There's a 35. There's a whole bunch of different lengths at 6x6. And actually, you can just take any template and start trimming and cutting it a little bit and change the length. It's easy.
So inside there, presumably, you've got two 35 millimeter cassettes and it just feeds from one to the other.
Right.
Yeah.
That's 35 millimeter. There's a, again,
did you,
most of them are 120.
For your 35 millimeters, Nick, did you figure out a system for clicks or did you just count the winds and just hope for the best and whatever happens?
Yeah, that's kind of the trickiest thing to get to work. And again, I've had, actually this spring, I've had a really irritating time with it. But there's a little piece of aluminum that sticks up in just barely extends over the, you know, the interior divider so that when the film rolls over it, it clicks.
Cool.
It's got to be, I got to figure out a better way to do it. It works, but
I know.
The odd thing is this one camera that I've used for the 12 years now, it has the most reliable, loud clicker. Huh. And do you think I can reproduce that?
is that one of the cameras photographed under the title Populist, Nick? The one you use for all these years, is it?
Is that in that picture? I don't know.
There's a 35 millimeter all the way to the left. It's a tiny little guy with just one little knob.
Yeah, I think that might be Neville. I don't know.
I think it looks like it's in a Philadelphia cream cheese box.
Oh, okay. Then it's Philly, yeah.
Philly. I heard references to Neville. I thought, Neville? I thought it was a person, but it's a camera. Is it Neville?
Yes, Neville is a camera.
Awesome. That was my biggest thing when me and Andrew did our little contest that we had, and we shot the infrared. Wasn't it infrared, Andrew?
You did. I didn't.
I did. That's right.
35 mil.
I put it in my zero image, and I was like, surely a turn and a half would be enough, you know, and I used a 35 millimeter 36 exposure roll, and I ended up having like four spaces in between each frame. I think I got like 10 frames off of a, you know, 36 exposure roll. I was like, oof, that's way too much.
Do you think getting the click system is the best, Nick? Because at least that's a definite.
You know, I don't
space,
know. There's, I don't know any other way to do it.
No, apart from guessing.
I mean, if I could figure out a better way to do it, I'd do it. You know, there's a clicker with the Allspix Matchbox camera, but because of the way that works, it wouldn't work in the. It would. I'd have to make the Populist more complicated to make it work. And, you know, putting some kind of wheel in there with a gear, boy, that's getting...
Yeah.
Doesn't sound like scissors and glue and cardboard to me.
Well, I'm going to be clicking on this. The main instructions for building them are at 10th anniversary Populist plan. So,
I mean, if you follow that, just any one of the sizes. And actually, there's two different sizes I'm making in the middle of that, you know, in that. And you have to go look for the 35 millimeter. You'll have to go look at the old one because way making the winder and the directions for the clicker and the old one, I should make a new one. But
I was thinking 35 millimeter pinholes. I've not really shot, and I think I'd like to have one, and I'd like to make one. So
again, the Populist is really easy to make.
because I like the idea of
drilling a 0.15 pinhole is, or a 0.2 pinhole is a little tricky.
I love the idea of loading 35 millimeter and shooting it and it being so small to carry around.
Yeah.
But once I develop it and it comes to like having to scan it, it's I'm out.
Well, I mentioned this a couple things ago when I had that fit this spring, that the dust, it doesn't take much dust to really make a 35 millimeter look awful.
Right.
But if you retouch the dust, which again is a pain in the ass, and I've heard you complain about this. Every time I do that, I think about when I was about probably your age, Corey. I would sit in front of the TV with a stack of 11 by 14 and 8 by 10 Ilford Gallery number 3 prints and my number 00 brush.
Sable brush.
And spot tone.
Yep, I still do that.
I would wet it with my tongue and sit there and watch TV and spot prints for hours.
Right.
Just to drive my wife crazy because I always had a black stripe down the middle of my tongue. So it's a lot easier to do that on the computer. But again, when you get rid of that dust and maybe rotate it to be level and especially adjust, you know, make the adjustments. You know, think of what you would do in the dark room. You don't just go in there and flip the light on and say, oh, okay, that's it. You know, you make test strips and you maybe make several draft prints and you burn and you dodge.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And you adjust the level. So I just do that stuff with the computer.
Do you do any darkroom work, Nick, now?
I mean, I developed the film. Printing, I loved the prints, but I sure wish it was easier to do it. And I'm a little older than you guys. So I've been accumulating crap for a long time, and I don't need to accumulate any more crap. So making prints would just be another pile of stuff.
Right.
And I don't enjoy the process enough. It was stressful for me because I would, you know, oh, that damn print is so close, but now I got to go and burn in another 15 seconds in this corner. You know, and so I get this stack of prints. Although the first 2 years my son was, my first 2 years of my son's life, I would shoot hundreds of photographs, and I would go in and I would buy these 250 sheet 5x7 boxes of outdated paper from the local camera store, and it was Ilford. Ilfa Speed number 4, graded paper, RC. And I would just look at the contact print and make a guess and make a print, go on to the next one. And I would just jam those suckers out as fast as I could print them. And actually, those are some of my favorite prints. And I've got, but there's like 250 photographs. So it was a crazy year. I've been in the darkroom. I've done it. I know it. I enjoy it. I enjoy the prints. I love the prints. But man, I don't want to spend my time doing that.
So Nick, tips on making pinholes, materials, distances and that sort of thing.
One thing that just, you know, it's stunning that something so simple makes it so much better. You know, that we always say, hold that pinhole, firmly against the brass when you're spinning it so it doesn't tilt and bend. And I could never do that. So just taking a piece of foam core and sticking it through that piece of foam core to hold it when you're drilling it, holds it so stably and makes it so much easier to make a perfectly round hole.
So you're using a small drill, 0.2, 0.3,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, the one, and I've experimented with just about everything, and I still think a needle stuck in a pencil eraser is still the best tool.
Yeah.
I tried pliers and somebody said the one that looked real positive was using an X-Acto knife to grip a needle, but I can't get it to grip the needle tight enough. It slips. So
What if you put it in the eraser and then put it inside the X-Acto knife? Well, that's too big for the eraser.
I don't think that would be a, be not adding anything, I don't think. But putting holding it through the foam core to keep that thing held vertical just works great. And the other thing I've found that has been really helpful is canned air. When you sand that burr off, I mean, it leaves this microscopic dust on there, and it's really hard to get it out of the hole. But canned air will blow it out of the hole pretty easily.
So what sort of sheet material do you recommend and thickness, Nick?
I like the brass. And if you eventually look at that post, you'll see that there is an advantage to the brass. The way it makes a hole, I won't go into the explanation, but aluminum sort of makes this splash before it spreads this crown out, not just on the side and the opposite side, it makes a burr, but on the side you're sticking in, it sort of makes this crown, whereas brass sort of dents in and then pierces. So the brass makes a little better hole, and I think it's, 0.002 inches? It's pretty thin. Yeah. But I bought this stuff in 1992. I bought 6 feet of it, 6 inches by 6 feet.
Wow.
And I've still got about 4 or 5 inches of it left.
Huh. And so you're using a very fine needle and just pushing and twisting, and then sanding the bump.
Definitely spinning. No, yeah. If you push, you'll tear.
Yeah.
So you're definitely drilling with the tip of that needle. Depending on what size, if I'm doing like a real small one, like a 0.15, I'll put it right against a hard table. So I'll barely be able to get the tip through it.
Hmm.
And if I'm doing like a 0.3, I'll take a matchbook cover and put it under that so I can get it a little. And it's a little hit or miss.
Sure. So I hate doing it because
I end up having to do it 5 times and I end up with 7 holes that are too big or something like that before I get one that I have this huge collection of like 0.37 to 0.45 holes down there that.
But in January this year, you posted a really detailed article. I was looking at it before we came on air about different pinhole sizes, different focal length, well, 2 different focal lengths, and looking to see, eventually you declare what the optimum, Mr. Holger Seit said, the optimum pinhole. But it was really interesting to see how the image changes as you,
that was kind of comeuppance to me because like two or three posts before I made this post that basically said, it's Lord Raleigh stuff. You can kind of ignore it and it changes the picture a little bit, but it's not, it's not that big a deal. And then I actually did the experiment and turns out that it's probably more critical than the size of the pinhole. I was really surprised at that. It's not that critical though. I mean, within a tenth of a millimeter and you're without, real analysis, you're not going to see much difference. The smoothness of the hole and the thinness of the brass
is more important.
That makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm. And all this stuff, folks, can be seen on Nick's blog. It's a fantastic resource.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, it's fun. You both are sit there in the throes in the middle of your career and you think, boy, if I could have an ideal job, what would it be? Mine was like, pinhole photographer. Wouldn't it be great to make a living as a pinhole photographer? Mm. And now I'm retired and I can be a pinhole photographer.
So your working career has largely been around teaching. Is that right, Nick?
Learning, I guess what you'd call learning technologies now. It was audio-visual communications. And, a lot of distance education currently. So this is why I was so stressed when we were trying to make this connection because, a lot of video conferencing and, web conferencing type applications I used to be involved in. And I taught 8 million faculty how to use PowerPoint and used to do Photoshop workshops and
An anchor stump.
And then I was an administrator, so I got to look at spreadsheets and argue with people, and that wasn't so much fun. Oh, but it was also fun having a bunch of, you know, enthusiastic people working for me and doing a good job. But it wasn't so much fun telling them they weren't going to get a raise.
So, Nick, what about your how you use pinhole cameras? I mean, looking through your blog, we were chatting just off air. It seemed to me that you're just photographing every moment. You're probably not.
Actually, I was thinking about that today. I haven't taken a picture for a while. It's and, you know, that happens to me occasionally. But actually making cameras has a lot to do with it. And, you know, one funny thing is I've got two rolls of film down there to scan. And that usually puts me off for a while until I get those scanned. And then, of course, I have to stick everything on the web. I know I'm horribly unedited, although I should give credit due that Sarah edits my writing and makes it better.
I was looking at the post from back end of last year, actually. So there was, you referenced the old F295 forum, and then you talk about my first camera with a Scotch box. And then you go on to talk about the variable cuboid. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about your Scotch box. Do you have to drink all the Scotch first, I suppose?
The Scotch boxes happened.
They're the round ones, the tube things at the bottom.
Well, you know, that one I think was that one might have been a tube. Yeah, that one might have been a tube.
Yeah.
But again, I've had several people give me bottles of Scotch for one thing or another, and said that they picked that because they thought it would make the best pinhole camera. Well, yeah. Okay, well, we better find out if that makes a good pinhole camera. And that was the first time I did it, and that one was extremely, you know, that one I just stuck a pinhole in the side and painted the inside black and stuck whatever paper I had in it and took a picture with it. So, but then as I've gotten into these, you know, making these folded and glued together boxes, I've sometimes taken packaging from Scotch boxes and other, obviously most recently, Chanel materials.
I like that camera that you made with the, when you lift the shutter up, she winks, you know, like she kind of, her eye goes up.
Yeah, that was, yeah. So that makes that a little more fun.
Sure.
So just, you know, that was kind of a silly, but actually, I don't know what I was inspired by, but that's, I like those photographs.
Yeah, cool.
You're clearly using different focal length cameras for different subjects. You want to perhaps
Using focal length.
Sorry.
There's no focusing going. Didn't I hear somebody else make this statement last week?
Yeah,
get him.
Yeah,
I know everybody else.
Actually, nothing is in focus really.
Everybody uses the term, and I understand it. But again, that if there is a defining feature of pinhole photography, it's that there's no focusing going.
Yeah.
So anyway,
it's all equally unsharp.
And this is one of the beauties of making cardboard cameras, you know, and I hear you guys talk about all those cameras out and, well, I would like a shorter focal length, or I want to try this format, or maybe I'd like to try stereo, who makes one of those, mm-hmm. and it has this limitation, so I don't want to get that. And what I do is I just make one.
I know, I can hear you shouting. Now, every time we mention this, I'm going to hear you shouting at the podcast. Just make one.
So I, you know, it's, you know, and then I get, you know, I get to realize that, well, I'm doing something different. Maybe I shouldn't be so stodgy. Maybe I should try something else. And that usually is a result of angle of view, right. You know, with a format. And
so do you prefer, do you go through periods of liking really wide stuff and then saying, actually, I want a tighter shot? Is this where you've got this variable cuboid? Is that a sort of multi?
Yeah, well, again, that was, I don't, I mean, you know, I was working, you know, the most excitedly with film and lenses in the late 70s, early 80s. And I had an F1, Canon F1. But, you know, the pressure to go to large format, that the best photography is the largest format, has always been around. And obviously there are visual things. And boy, I used to dream about a Mamiya RB67. Wow, that would be just the ultimate, to be able that I could continue to do the kind of photographs that I wanted to, but I'd have this big honking negative. But it cost $3,000.
Not anymore, it doesn't.
Not today, it doesn't.
So I never got to do it. So anyway, you know, I sit around playing, thinking with the cameras, it's like, boy, you know, that SLR shape, like a Hasselblad. And so, it had to do with the reduction of the distance to the pinhole. Again, I had just made that evil cube, and I thought, well, let's see if I can do that. And one thing just sort of led to another. Well, if I reduce the focal length by putting the film behind the image plane, well, then it doesn't matter what the focal length, there you got me using it. the distance of the pinhole is, you know, in the front of the camera, I can do anything I want. And I had made that pinhole lab camera the year before, and I thought, well, but making a front with a light trap is pretty easy. It's just another piece of cardboard, you know. And so I just started playing with that concept. And yeah. I wish I could figure out a way to make a dark slide so I could change it in the field.
I really like the perspective. That's probably the right word, or the angle of view. I'm looking at your post, Nick, from just before Christmas last year, and it is the pinhole distance roll reversal with the variable cuboid.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've got a link to the, you know, it takes you, I think, probably to the camera, and then the pictures the you've generated. You've got some. A weatherboarded house, and then another house. There's just a little bit of distortion, and I think they're cracking shots. And the ones you've done of the Buddha and the glass, and the little still life with some silverware. These are just
You like the I love academic study of the silver.
Yeah, I just like them all, and even the one at the bottom with the curtain and the flowers and a little bit of sunlight coming through. And then you've got some more windows with fire escapes. And, yeah.
Well, you know, you
and they're square as well.
You very often ask people, "Who are you influenced by?"
Yeah.
And I'm not influenced by pinhole photographers. I'm influenced by Julia Margaret Cameron, mm-hmm. William Henry, or Peter Henry Emerson, William Henry Fox Talbot, Stieglitz, Steichen, Strand, Weston, Cunningham, boy, you know, Penn, Avedon, Leibowitz, boy, you name one, and man, I want to be that photographer. So it's endless. And again, lately, getting back into black and white is like I'm into the silver again, and you know, the silver and the light. And yep. So especially with that last post with the Rue Cambon camera, mm-hmm. Getting into the challenge of taking white things and putting them in black backgrounds, seeing if I can get that full range of you know, zone system.
There's black
tones.
And whites.
Black, and I don't, and white, I don't, whites. I mean, I measure the exposure, but most of it is adjusting contrast and burning and dodging. Mm.
So these pictures that I'm raving over, are they all made with, is it T-Max 100 you're using?
I use, I don't know, I usually say at the end of the post or somewhere in the post, but yeah, I like T-Max 100. I think it's got a Lee Rolong tonal scale. Mm-hmm. And it's, I have a tendency, again, from 10 years of using color film, I have a horrible tendency to overexpose, because with color film, it just, you know, hardly matters. You just print through the damn thing. I mean, there are limits. But with black and white film, boy, if you block up those highlights, boy, they're blocked up. Mm-hmm. There's nothing you can do about it. So so I'm a little more careful with the black and white film. And but I don't do anything really great. I use pinhole assist with their reciprocity correction. And
yep.
I guess a lot, you know.
That's what someone was asking. That's what I was talking about. I use I'll use it whenever it gets really kind of tricky lighting, you know. But most of the time, if I'm outside, it's less than a second as fast as you can open and close, you know.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of luck with ISO 400. Boy, they're showing my age. ISO 400 film. I tend to overexpose it and block it up. And especially with the longer cameras, you see that diffraction reducing your contrast, especially in overexposed highlights.
Right.
So T-Max, I got what I've got in there. And I also Freestyle, what's that stuff called? Arista.edu 100, and that's because it's cheap.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to test a camera and I'm not sure that it's light tight, boy, I'm not going to take an $8 roll of film and stick it in there. Yeah.
Andrew, so. You use the FOMA. That's close to that Arista, isn't it?
I use FOMA 100.
Actually, FOMA and Arista, I think, are the same film.
Yeah. Could well be.
And I recently developed a sheet of Shanghai 4x5, and that's very similar to FOMA as well.
Yeah, it's like shooting in the 1940s.
Yeah. But it's
the same film. I mean, it's the same film that's been made since. It's probably no different than Verichrome Pan, I would bet.
Yeah, these ones I was raving about were T-Max 100. And
but this T-grain structure of Kodak films, I like that.
Yeah, I just started getting into T-Max 400, but in my film cameras, I've not shot it in pinhole. I shot some T-Max 100 last summer, and I made the mistake of putting some gel filters inside the camera, and I got a lot of light bouncing around and made some interesting effects. But so I need to go back and do some T-Max 100, I think, based on what I'm seeing here anyway.
Yeah, I hate to be such a stodgy old, but things like light leaks and distortion and, you know, crazy over and over underexposure, I don't know. I'm not into that.
I really like your little still life pictures. I think that I just keep looking at them. They're great.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that other post, the one you were talking about from back end of last year, was Lord Raleigh talking about sharpness. So that was the thing that kicked it off, wasn't it? Oh, there you go. It was from a comment in the Lensless Podcast Facebook group.
Oh, yeah.
That a longer distance to the pinhole always results in a reduction in sharpness. Yeah, I remember that. That was, I think that might have been our Andrew Sanderson talking about that.
Maybe.
Well, I hear that again. That's one of the truisms that, and you look at, you know, look at all these pinhole cameras that you know, they're manufactured. Man, I think the six centimeter is as long as that Reality So Subtle 6x6.
Mm-hmm.
No, but that's even really short. That's like
it is. Yes. Mm.
So anyway, you know, they're all over these really short cameras, you know. And so that kind of ticked me off one day. And again, I've used these long cameras for years, and very often, literally, really, I probably could have gotten better pictures if I would have been. But again, the pinhole was not that far off the optimum, so
right. It was,
you know.
Well, I've got a lot of reading to do here. That's all I can say. I think I might. I was going to have when I go on holiday in a week's time, I was going to have a social media break. So unless I can work out a way of downloading the whole of your blog to my iPad, I'm going to have to find some internet and spend my week going
another
back on
holiday?
Your blog.
Another
holiday.
Holiday?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I mean, other things about making a camera.
Mm-hmm.
Let the glue dry. Clamp it.
Yeah.
Let the glue dry. Clothespins are your friends. And make sure the darn thing is opaque.
Yeah.
You know,
for sure.
It's a real pain in the neck to have this, to shoot a roll of film. And I think, oh boy, that really worked out well. And then
nope.
You get a blank roll of film. So, but again, black spray paint and opaque black photographic tape. And I've read other things, to make mm-hmm. sure that the damn thing is really opaque, because film is really sensitive to light.
Super sensitive.
Especially in the sun. It makes a difference how I've gotten tricked where I've gone out and taken pictures with a camera under cloudy conditions and thought, oh, that camera's great. And then later on, loaded up, went out in the sun and
boom, light leaks.
Yeah.
Fogged. Yep.
I love your color work as well. I was looking back at where's this one? There's a fisherman on a fisherman's on a boat, and then you got a bridge and some other bridges. And you won't remember. I don't know when this was, but between 1980 and 2011 for state projects.
Well, that was when I was riding around playing with the tripods.
Yeah.
Which I have to write an update because
yeah, you've got a whole section on tripods as well.
Two out of those three tripods broke. And I've gotten a couple more that have broken since. And I wish somebody built wish I could specify a steel-made desktop tripod.
Make one.
Are you a tripod yes man or a tripod no man?
Oh, I always tripod.
Yeah, you're not.
I want to point the camera where I want to point the camera.
Yeah,
If I see a picture, I want to take that picture. I don't want to have to. And I mean, you can't always, but still.
Kodak Gold 200. There we go.
I have lots of tripods, and I have a desktop tripod habit, although for a long time I had this one little folding tripod that was just the ticket. It was in the pocket with my Populist and. It was always there, and it broke last fall. So since then, I bought like 6 desktop tripods, 3 of which are broken. So,
yeah. I have the Manfrotto one, the one with the extendable legs, the little desktop thing, Pixie or something, is it called?
Yeah, but put that in your pocket. Come on. You're not going to carry that in your pants pocket.
Yes, it's not that small, is it? I'll
so
put it in my camera bag.
That's my criteria.
If it fits in your pants pocket.
If it fits in my pants pocket. Otherwise, I got plenty. I got tripods.
And are you still making books, Nick? I see you've got a couple of books, links to your books.
Well,
site.
Again, in people talking on your show, there's talk about blurb.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a university graphic artist, so publishing on demand was interesting. And when the first one I did was on Cafe Press, that they would let you have a store and each type of product you could have one of. And so I made this book, The Pinhole of Nature, which it's my little homage to Fox Talbot and Pinhole. But they only let you make one book for one. Or one product. You can make a t-shirt, a long sleeve t-shirt, a short sleeve t-shirt, whatever product they let you do.
Right.
I guess when I did this exhibit at Mosquito Hill, I made a blurb book, and they're kind of expensive. And if you make a mistake, you have to buy one in order for it to stay available. And so if you buy the thing and you find an error, you got to fix it and then buy another one in order for it to stay online. And so I went to Lulu, which I had done some Lulu books about the digital imaging and PowerPoint in the past. And so I went to Lulu, and I really think the Lulu books are nice. Actually, I haven't seen any of these three. I haven't actually made a print of these three. But I made a couple other things with I shot with my F1 with my 20 millimeter lens that I did books for. And I tell you, the quality for a $10 book, it's really nice.
I'm going to become a customer of yours fairly soon. I don't know which one. They all look great. So you've got behind Osh. How do you pronounce that? Is that where you live, Osh?
Oshkosh.
Yeah, a portfolio of pinhole photographs of the backs and sometimes sides of building.
And yeah, then name of a tribal chief in the area, okay. Who's in it, kind of an interesting story in himself.
And then you've got my pinhole camera at Mosquito Hill. That was the exhibit you were talking about. And then the first one, is it the Pinhole of Nature?
Right.
That's the one where you're mentioning William Henry Fox Talbot.
Yep. But again, it's Talbot was trying to explain to people what the deal was with photography. They'd never seen it. And as photographers, you probably know that seeing with a camera is not like seeing with your brain. So you sort of have to work those two together.
Right.
And Talbot was trying to explain those to people. So I thought, well, here, I'll see if I can take his format and explain to people about pinhole.
Gotcha.
Sorry, I was in the process. I got distracted. I was in the process of clicking on Lula and looking
at... So easily distracted, Andrew.
Well, no, I was getting excited about making a small purchase and...
Making your own Lulu books is great. You know, you make one, you buy it. Hey, I went to my friend's party and I did a sequence of photographs. Here, rather than giving them a link, you give them a book, which is kind of cool.
They're great presents as well, aren't they?
And for like $10-$15, I mean, geez. I remember making a match print, one page, about $300.
Whew.
And then, of course, in order to run that page on a press, you were talking minimums in thousands to 2,000s of copies.
Thanks.
So, being able to just to make up a book. And again, that's what I did. I was a graphic artist mostly. And I also obviously did everything you can possibly imagine with AV. Most of the time I was working as a graphic artist. So whipping a book together is something I do. And again, these were three things that just seemed to
click,
seemed to work as books. Hmm. And, you know, every day I think, I've got about 17 of these little themes that I think I could put together. And I may get to it someday.
So lulu.com looks interesting site.
If you find a mistake in the PDF, well, you can just fix it. They don't make you buy a copy every last time. Uh-huh. And, my niece's wedding. When was my niece's wedding? In 2007. And they've still got that file. I can print anytime I want.
Right. Well, I'm gonna have a go. I think, as well as buying your book, I'm going to have a go at making something together. I think so.
Yeah. I might also.
Yeah. Cool. Again, Vanity Press is. Again, I remember when Vanity Press was really Vanity Press. So.
But really, you know, whatever you want to call it, it's getting an image into people's hands, isn't it? And whether it's a print or a book.
There's that idea of sitting there with a book, with a theme.
Which I miss.
Is different than clicking on a screen.
Yeah.
Although, again, print quality, again, I'm always amazed at how easy. I mean, print quality used to be a real struggle. And now it's so easy.
Right.
Cool.
All right. Well, Andrew?
I'm just looking at my list of talking points. Memorable pinhole tips, which I think we've kind of covered.
Yeah.
Really, we've touched on lots of things, but we can just refer folks back to Nick's blog, which we'll do in a moment.
Yep.
And I'm certainly going to be spending a lot of time going back on Nick's blog because I think it's fantastic. And thank you so much for coming on and having a chat with us,
Nick.
Yeah, well, again, as I follow your podcast quite regularly, although I mean a lot of times I think, well, these kids, aren't they cute? But I won't get on your case for that.
I am.
No, please do. But both Corey and I spout a lot of nonsense, and we try and say things that are true, but sometimes we get carried away.
Sometimes Andrew gets carried away with it.
So I think and that's the beauty of the Lendless Podcast Facebook group, is that we can carry on these discussions and really, you know, Nick, you know, you're active in there, and you know, if we, rather than just shout at the podcast, just say something, because it starts a discussion, doesn't it? And say, actually, you were talking about this, but
yes,
you know, this is what you should do, or this is, you know, let me refer you to this.
Free to correct.
Yeah,
Andrew.
And it keeps me going that I had my, you know, I did my time as being, you know, mailing slides into juried shows and, you know, all that. You know, I'm accumulating stuff is not what I'm into these days. And, so being able to, you know, take photographs and having somebody to show them to. That's basically it, showing somebody my photographs.
Sure.
Well, and you know, the fact that you've got a lifetime of wisdom and knowledge, and that you've documented it all on the blog, I think is great. So, and
one always cracks me up.
Well, I think you sound
fooling
wise.
Fooling around and wisdom are.
You sound wise to me.
Definitely.
Don't you think, Corey?
Yes. Far wiser than Andrew, anyways.
Absolutely. Well, that wouldn't be difficult.
Yeah.
All right, Andrew. Next time you've got an idea that, gee, I'd like a camera like that,
make it
down. You can probably make it. And you know, don't try and make it all day. You know, I've got a camera right here in my hand that's been sitting on my kitchen table for, oh God, 3 weeks that I haven't finished. So.
Well, I am accumulating. When I move into semi early retirement at the end of this year, I'm accumulating.
Oh, really?
I'm accumulating. I can't afford to stop working, but I'll be drastically reducing my time, partly to concentrate on just having a break, doing creative stuff.
Well, and you've got such a broad, you know, you get into the lens thing too. So.
Yeah, I'm into too many things really. But I've got all my tins sitting there looking at me. I've got some various coffee cans and big tins, small tins. And I've got some small needles. I've got some brass.
Sure.
And I've got some foam core. And I'm just looking for time to start experimenting. And you've just given me loads more inspiration to crack on and get making.
Keep going.
Okay, cool.
Awesome. Yep.
So, Corey, you're going to, what we're doing now, wrapping up?
Sure, but before we do that, I want to say thank you to Dominic Silverthorne.
Yep.
Chris Sabring. I don't know if I said your last name right, Chris, I'm sorry. And Michael Roman, because they all chipped into the coffee account for us. So, thank you.
And, anyone who has contributed on the Ko-fi donation thing, that's really much appreciated. So it's all going into the sticker and t-shirt and pencil fund, isn't it?
Yep. And some stuff's coming very soon, so I keep saying that, but it's going to happen.
Well, this is certainly helping, having some funds to produce some of these things.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys sent me snail mail addresses. Would that be? Would you trust me?
Do what?
If I sent, if you sent me your snail mail addresses.
Oh yeah. Oh, you mean
trust
postal
me
addresses?
With that? Oh,
sure.
Okay.
Maybe yeah, we'll you're not going to send
happened.
A bomb through the post, are you? I always check things to make sure it's not ticking.
I've never had anything explode.
It's there you go.
Yeah, I'll send you my address.
Yeah. So let's tell Nick, if you want to take a second and let everybody know where they can find your blog spot and any address.
It's
for...
pinholica.blogspot.com. Yep. It's, you know, pinhole without the E and then ICA, as I said, like.
I'll put it in the show notes too, so there'll be a link for it so everybody can get straight to it. Yep.
Yep.
Andrew?
Yes, mate.
Where can people reluctantly find you?
Well, I'm on Twitter at Warboys Snapper, and I also curate the Lensless podcast Twitter account, which is at the Lensless, I think. And you, where else can you find me? Oh, I have a blog, which is mainly lens-based photography, I think. But that's andrewbartram.wordpress, maybe, something like that.
Yep.
And you can find me, apart from when I'm on vacation, when I'm now going to ditch my phone, you can find me hanging around the Lensless podcast Facebook group. And if you're into large format photography, you can find me...
Good God!
You can find me every 2 weeks with Simon Foster on the Large Format Photography podcast.
Think a lot of yourself, don't you, Andrew?
No, not really.
No, not really.
I just seem to do lots of stuff.
Yeah, that's good, though. At least you're staying busy.
Oh, okay. And Instagram as well, you can find me. But Warboys Snapper, mostly. What about you, Corey? Where can folks find you?
Instagram at Pinhole Cannon. That's pretty much it for me. And in the, I'm in and out of the Facebook group. I try to go over there and interact as much as I can.
And we have a Flickr. We have a Flickr group with some diehard Flickr lovers, Flickr holsters. So go over to the Lensless Podcast Flickr group. It's
say
a great,
hello.
Great. Say hello. It's a great way to view people's work.
All right. Well, Nick, thanks again for coming.
Thank you.
All right. I've enjoyed
this morning, and hopefully we can, maybe we can get you back on again some more at another time.
Sure. I'm an old retired guy.
Maybe next year for, we can get you back on at least around Pinhole Day next year.
So yeah. 20th, having a second decade. That's gotta be something. I'm trying to decide whether it should be a renewal or a season finale, but we'll see.
Okay.
The transatlantic guys are meeting up in Dublin next year, Nick. So I'll be going to that.
Dublin.
Dublin in the Republic of Ireland.
In the rain.
In the rain, yes.
Well, I shouldn't leave one experience be my... Actually, I was there on a sunny day, but at the airport...
No, it does rain a lot in Ireland.
Yeah.
No, does it?
The Emerald Isle, that's why they call it that.
Yeah, I got lost in Dublin in the rain.
Uh-oh.
Well, not really lost. Just sort of wandered aimlessly around.
That's good. Okay, well, we... everybody, thanks for listening. Thanks to Nick, and we hope everybody has a great week, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah. Bye, everybody.
Okay, bye.
I'm digging back to, I think we should just ask him a general question about passing on
okay,
tips about...
Okay, now we're finally connected.
Hello, Nick.
That, I was jumping between my iPad and my phone.
Oh, no, iPads don't work.
well, it runs the app. And
I know it does.
Virtually
yes.
Everything else.
I know, yeah.